The Fan on Demand. This is Hoops on Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Hoops on Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590. Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you. Just chatting away with Gord Stellick, host of Blue and White Tonight. Joe Sicilia. See, it's taken me a while, Joe. It's gonna eventually hammer home with me, but I had to make you spin the dial a little bit more there, right? Do a little mix. Keep mixing if you want. We're on the air till 8 o'clock. Coming up later on, Jack Armstrong will join us. Also, assistant coach of the Chicago Bulls, Ed Pinckney, will be on the program. And to kick things off right off the bat, Jonesy, he's our guy. We talked to him the first day that he came to town, and he suited up against his former team. He's going to be against his former team this weekend as well. From the Toronto Raptors, forward James Johnson. How you doing tonight, James?
Good. How you guys doing?
Good, thanks. I wanted to ask you before we get to you know your time here in Toronto
since
you come over.
Eric wasn't joking when he said kick things off either.
Yeah, I want to ask you about this because James, I know you might be tired of answering about this, but we weren't there that day. We didn't get a chance to see it, and I mean no media was. Tell me about this like helicopter kung fu chop, this spinning kick that you did to whack the ball out of the hoop at practice last week.
I just kicked it in. The ball didn't come out. I kicked it, popped it back up in the air, and then went back into the hoop. But it was two balls went into the rim at the same time. You know, the balls happen to get stuck sometimes. And so one of the teammates, Ed Davis, said, "You karate master, you couldn't kick that." And I just said, "Yeah, I could." And I tried, and I kicked it.
I know it caught him by surprise because James, when I talked to you about it, you kept looking at me with a smile on my face and your face saying, the look on your face when you were looking at me was saying, this cat doesn't believe me. Right? Yeah. That's what I got from you. But I mean, Bayless, Ed Davis was right beside you when we were talking. How did the challenge come about? Just from Ed just kind of poking fun like that and saying, I bet you couldn't do it?
Yeah, he was just, you know, people always try to test to see if you really have it or you're just talking. And I don't think they really thought I knew how to kick or do anything of that nature.
We're speaking with James Johnson from the Toronto Raptors. All right, we'll leave this stuff aside here because, I mean, we were joking on the air last night, James, that, you know, if the lockout ends up coming, I mean, I know you've talked about maybe going back to school to finish off a degree and take some more classes and everything else, but we were talking about, man, you might just go, you know, go toe-to-toe with, like, George St. Pierre or something and get in the cage and you know, take the MMA route for a few months if you've got no ball to play.
Yeah, you know, if it wasn't in my contract or whatnot to fight no more or do anything, I probably would. You know, that kind of training is always fun.
Well, technically speaking, without a CBA, you wouldn't have a contract, technically.
James, we just want to be the hype man in the corner, both of us. You know those guys that are in the corner to pump people up? That's us. We just want to be the hype man.
Yeah, that would definitely work. You guys definitely do a great job of that.
James,
going back to training, I'm probably definitely going to have to train like that this summer again. I did it last summer. It helped out a lot. So just go back to the roots for a while.
James, talking about going back to the roots, next game up is your old team, the Bulls, and they're kind of rolling right now. You probably know them as well as anybody else. You know, how do you get in there and steal a win on Saturday night?
We gotta go in there and play like we know how. Four quarters, we can't play three good quarters or two good quarters and an okay quarter. We gotta play some of the best basketball we've played all year. You know, but we're great at stepping up to the challenge. You know that you see OKC are supposed to be this, that, or whoever. Whoever had us down as the underdogs, and we went in there, played like a team, played together four quarters, and ended up pulling it off. Also, if we do that, then we can match up with anybody. We're young, we're talented, and, you know, we got heart.
James, is it the youth that has created some of the, or I shouldn't even say some, a lot of the dips that we've seen over the course of the season? I mean, I know you've only been here for a short period of time, but even that last road trip, you get a huge win in Oklahoma City. You've got a lead with 4 minutes to go in Phoenix. You've got a lead with 8 minutes to go against the Clippers, but you guys get absolutely dismantled in Denver and in Golden State. I mean, why such, you know, such a difference in the games and the outcomes within even a trip, let alone the season?
You know, yeah, being young, rebuilding, you know, having a lot of players getting high-quality minutes, trying other things like playing this person at the three or this person at the one, just trying to get a better outlook or just playing who wants to play hard type stuff. But I feel, you know, we go hard in practice. Everybody's a challenge in practice, things like that. But being ready and being focused for one game into another one, playing 100% both games, you know, that does take a lot. It takes a lot of mental process and a lot of growth on your game. So, like I said, we're young right now, but I feel for future reference, we're going to be real good.
James, what are you seeing when you look at, you know, we talk about how, you know, making the mistakes leads to gaining experience and hopefully cutting down on some of those mistakes, especially fourth quarter. What are you seeing now from this team? Again, another loss last night. We're tied after three quarters right there, and it, you know, a couple of plays made at the end by Milwaukee, some good ball movement. What are you seeing with this team that you can take forward where you get into that situation again and you can look back at something that's happened before and say, you know what, this is what we can't do if we're going to win this game?
Yeah, of course. You know, that's something that we have to really just look inside ourselves. I feel like it's individual sometimes, and sometimes it's team. But it takes five guys to play man on man defense, and we need everybody on the same page. And you know, all credit to Milwaukee. They did the play there, supposed to move the ball, and got great results from it. But I feel like we're learning. Like I said, this is really only my first few games ever playing in the NBA, I feel like, especially playing this many minutes. So, you know, to be able to make mistakes and not get pulled out, not worry about getting pulled out playing through my mistakes, I feel like it's going to help me a lot in the future of not making the same mistakes.
Speaking with James Johnson of the Toronto Raptors, James, speaking of the future, is it too early for you to be able to assess whether or not you think you have a home here in Toronto?
You know, I'm really hoping I do. I really love it here. The fans are great. You know, they're humble and they're honest. They come to every game and they cheer. You know, to play for an organization like this would be great for me. I feel we're young. I've been on young teams and I excelled on young teams. So I feel we just need another year or two, maybe a year, just to get to know each other better, just to know what each other's tendencies are and things like that, become a family. Because right now I feel like different groups on the team right now is, you know, causing us to stay away from each other a little bit. But I feel we all come together, play as a team, and we're going to win.
James, a couple things there. You talk about the fans. Chicago's a town that they've won. They know what it's like to win. They've had championships. They had a run with, you know, during the Jordan years. They know what it's like to win. Give me a little bit of maybe a comparison's the wrong word, but give me a little bit of a feel for the fans in Toronto and the city compared to Chicago, because they're both major markets with passionate fans. You know, I know Jared Bayless, when he first came to town, he said, "What is it about Toronto that people don't like?" And I'm wondering if you kind of feel the same way.
Oh, no, I understand. You know, playing for Chicago, I don't know playing for Chicago so much as playing with Derrick Rose was really the case, because wherever he was, he brought out all the fans. But these people love their country, and they love Canada, and they come out and support regardless. They're loyal fans, like I said, and they're really wanting to keep us pushing, keep us motivated, and keep us wanting to try to win and get better.
James, has it been a big adjustment for you coming to Canada? I mean, we get it from the fans. I mean, when Eric and I say it, nobody believes it, but when a player says it, all of a sudden it's a story. The fact that, you know, it's not as big an adjustment, and people feel that guys don't want to play here, but we keep telling them it has to do more with winning than it does the city or anything else.
Oh, of course. I definitely said this is underestimated. this place they call Toronto is great. It's lively, and you know, it feels safe out here. So I definitely see myself staying here for as long as I need to.
James, when you talk about that core and kind of looking at the team and giving yourself another year and looking forward to what's happening, how much do you look at? I'm just going to use last night's team opponent as an example, Milwaukee, where they sort of caught the world by storm last year. They got into the postseason. They've slipped this year, but at the same time, they're still in the thick of things in terms of trying to stay in the hunt for at least that final seed. It doesn't appear like the future setting up for there to be a lot of wiggle room. So what is it going to take for you guys to get in and be one of those teams? Because obviously, it looks like, at least from the outside, you've got teams that are locked in you know, Miami and Boston, Orlando, Atlanta, you know, the way Philly's come on, Chicago now. I mean, you're going to have at least four or five teams that are going to be surefire playoff teams for at least the next 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, I hear that too. But like I said, I have excelled before, and I feel with the talent I bring it in, and just right now getting my feet wet playing these few games I have played, it's only ensuring that my future is going to get better and my game is going to get better at the same time. So I'm not in no worry, but at the same time I feel like it's not offense. Everybody, we have scoring power. We have guys who can really shoot the ball, but it's the defense. And if we can get good at defense, we take pride in our defense, then we would be able to compete with any of those teams that you mentioned.
Well, James, it sounds like somebody's coming over because the dog's starting to do his thing. So we're going to let you go here. One quick question for you, though. Saturday night, I mean, this is the first time Jonesy and I have been doing the broadcast together for 6 years and going back pre-half and post and all that stuff for more than a decade. I think this is the first time that we've had a game during the Final Four. So, I mean, you're going to miss it. We're going to miss it. Are you going to be, like, checking the computer as soon as your game's done against the Bulls, though? I mean, do you got any predictions or prognostications for us?
No, I definitely, I'm not too busy watching that. I'm trying to focus on the Bulls.
That might be the best answer right now, and then that way you don't have to have any allegiances to anybody right now. So we appreciate it, James. All right, James.
I hear that.
There's James Johnson of the Toronto Raptors. Appreciate his time tonight on Hoops. And that seems to be the way with a lot of guys. As soon as their team's out, as soon as there's no connection or affiliation,
and you
doesn't
know,
matter.
And that's what, I guess that's what Canadian basketball fans don't understand, how strong the alumni and the ties are to your school, particularly if you played. I mean, and the coach is still there. You know, Caron Butler apparently was strutting around the locker room in Dallas and giving it to Jason Terry because of, you know, where UConn is and you know, how they came through Arizona. And it was something I was trying to explain to some of my Canadian relatives that have never experienced that in the U.S., that people are just crazy about it. I mean, doesn't matter what age, whether you're 5 or, you know, 55 or 65 or 75 with your face painted and the color of whatever it is you wear to the game to support your team. For guys like this, James Johnson, I bet you ask him, he probably didn't pay attention to term at all because Wake Forest wasn't in. And it's one of those things how guys really support their school in that sense.
When we return after the 20 Sports Update, when we continue right up until 8 o'clock with Hoops, Ed Pinckney, former NBA, former Toronto Raptor, and of course now current assistant coach with the Chicago Bulls, the Raptors' next opponent on Saturday night, the Bulls. We will talk to Ed Pinckney when we return on Hoops on Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 590. Welcome back to Hoops on Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 590. Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you here till 8 o'clock tonight. Jack Armstrong will join us a little bit later on as well, and we'll take a look at the Final Four, as I alluded to it briefly there with James Johnson at the end of our conversation. So again, thanks to James Johnson for joining us. Time permitting tonight, I'm not sure if we'll be able to slide this in, but if you missed it last night on the halftime show of the Raptors and Bucks broadcast, I had a chance to go one-on-one with Sherman Hamilton, and for the time being, it's not Sherman Hamilton of NBA TV Canada or former Canadian guard. It is Sherman Hamilton, VCU alum, because he is talking the talk as his team is walking the walk, and he's walking around the halls of the ACC asking who's getting rammed next as VCU and Butler go toe-to-toe on the weekend with Final Four on Saturday, as we'll be in the midst of calling the action between the Bulls and the Raptors.
Hey, can't blame the guy.
No, I'm not blaming him.
No, but I'm just saying, like, his team is doing it. It's like, talk it, man. Like, this is your chance to talk snap to people. I mean, and you know the funny thing is, I think they're going to get to the championship game. And the way the Final Four is set up this year, we're talking the classic David and Goliath, right? UConn and Kentucky on one side, Butler and VCU on the other side, right? So it's going to be a classic David and Goliath matchup. Two Davids fighting in one Final Four and two Goliaths in the other. And, you know, hopefully we'll get a chance to hook up with our man Eddie Pinckney, because it was 26 years ago tomorrow, April 1st, that Georgetown upset Villanova. And I remember, as a guy who cheered for Georgetown, I remember the headline in the paper the next day when Villanova won. I mean, that was crazy. It might have been one of the last games in the shot clock era, championship games. And they were perfect. They were darn near perfect. Missed like 7 or 8 shots in the entire game. And the headline in the paper the next day, no April Fool's joke. Eddie, you there, man?
I am here with you. How are you doing?
I'm good. And we're just talking about the improbable, well, in some people's eyes, upset of Georgetown. Before we get to the Bulls, I mean, it's that time of the year. Last year was the 25th anniversary. How much do you guys still get together and talk about that? Or is it, you know, kind of relived in the Philadelphia area?
Well, both. You know, most of the guys and players and coaches that were part of that team live in and around the Philadelphia area. And, you know, this particular year we had a little bit of a celebration. Rolly Massimino, who continues to coach college basketball, he's coaching down at Northwood University, was in the NAIA championship this past year. So a lot of guys were sort of following his progress and how he was doing, and it coincided with the NCAA tournament. So we had a lot of fun watching his team play and then reminiscing about our team and, you know, just hoping the best for the players and Rolly Massimino.
Eddie, let me ask you a question just sort of generically. And for those that haven't attended a major program, or especially played athletically at a major program, they wouldn't understand. And I'm including myself in that. That's why I'm asking the question. What is it about the connection that especially an athlete has to his alma mater? Because it seems like it, so often, and not just in basketball, but even in football, the connection to where you played your college ball is often greater than the connection you may have with a pro team that you spent a chunk or all of your career with. Even if you want a championship, there's still something that lures you in and that always ties you to that alma mater.
Well, generally, the players on college teams are all sort of cut out of the same cloth. I mean, you go to class together, you eat in the same cafeteria together. You know, very often, you know, you go out together and hang out at different places, so that, you know, you just develop a lot of camaraderie. And, you know, most of the NBA players that I talk to, generally most of their friends are from either their college towns or classmates that they went to school with. In addition to that, before you get to the college, you sort of introduce to the culture of that particular college. So, you know, even if you go to the school for just 1 year, you sort of, as you're in the college, you sort of spend so much time meeting the alumni, meeting the different people who have been a part of that fabric for so long. That doesn't happen on the pro level, and that's why most of the guys are, you know, they just always relish the opportunity to root for their teams during this time of year. I mean, it's awesome. And in addition to that, the entire country is involved in it. I mean, wherever I go, whether I'm in California or whether I'm in Portland, Oregon, nobody ever says, hey, you know, when you were with the Celtics, that was a great time. They generally associate me with Villanova and, you know, the Fab Five and those guys with Michigan and Grant Hill with Duke. And, you know, it's sort of the time when guys are young and have the most fun during their careers.
Eddie, and I remember you telling me Rolly took that a step further because it was tradition at Villanova that you guys would always have Sunday dinner together.
We did. I mean, there aren't very many Sunday dinners I have with Coach Thibodeau or Ron Adams. Most of those times are spent with my family. But you're exactly right. I mean, there were times where, at least a couple times a month, Massimino would invite us over to his house. And at the time, there weren't very many basketball games on TV. There was generally a big one on at the time, and we would all go over to his house. His wife would cook a huge bowl of pasta, and we were all hanging out in his living room.
All right, Eddie, let me flip gears a little bit if I can. I mean, we could continue to reminisce about college ball the entire time, but we do have to pick your brain a little bit on the Chicago Bulls and getting set for the Raptors tomorrow night, Saturday night in Chicago. Eddie, what has been the biggest reason why the Bulls have been able to put it all together this year? Because I know Derrick Rose is playing at an MVP level, and if I had a ballot right now, he'd be number one on my ballot. But, I mean, he was a hell of a player last year, too. And this team got in by the skin of their teeth last year. What has been the difference that the light just suddenly turned on for everybody, and it's kind of been that sort of snowball that's been just gaining steam and getting size all season?
Well, I would attribute it to two things. The first thing is, Thibodeau has done a great job in getting everyone organized from start to finish. I mean, right at the beginning of the year, he had a plan and an idea of how he wanted the team to play on both ends of the floor. I think generally when you talk about him and his coaching style, it's predicated on the way the team plays on the defensive end. But I think he's given a plan to each and every player how he wants them to operate on the offensive end, and that's really helped us immensely. I can't tell you how much it has really helped, especially in late-game situations. The second thing would be the play of Lou Alden. I mean, this guy has had, for us, an MVP season. He's playing consistent basketball, and we sort of get that 1-2 punch with him and Derek, and not many people talk about it. Obviously, Carlos Boozer is the other scorer that we have on the ball club, but he's sort of been in and out of the lineup with injuries. And then Joakim Noah has had, some time where he's been injured. So we've been without either of those guys, but we haven't been without the other two. And they've played consistent ball all season long.
Eddie, people are saying, Eric mentioned about Derrick Rose and the MVP, and people are talking about how, when Rose is not in the lineup, the Bulls are basically, the same kind of team from a plus-minus standpoint, as opposed to, when LeBron's out of the lineup, the Heat are barely better than other teams, and when he's in the lineup, they're like 10 to 15 points better. The defense is a huge thing. How much confidence, as you said, does this team have going forward? Because I know you and I talked earlier in the year, and as well as the teams your team was playing, there was still, I sensed it in your voice. I know you didn't say anything, but there was still a bit of trepidation around the big boys, Boston, Miami, and maybe meeting them later on down the road. And here we are down the road now. How confident are you guys feeling when you run into them? Because you're going to one or maybe both come playoff time.
I mean, there's certainly a huge amount of confidence with the team at this point in time. I mean, we have the number one seed, so if we finished up today, we'd have home court advantage. We've played well at home. That gives us a lot of confidence. But I think, all the guys on the team understand that the playoffs start a new season for everyone. And the veterans on this team keep reminding the young players of that. Health is a huge a thing for us. You know, as I mentioned before, we've been without, you know, some of the big guys on the front line. And in order to play well against those other two teams, you need the health of a Joakim Noah. You need the health of a Carlos Boozer in order to play well against those teams. So, you know, we just haven't had that all season long for an extended period of time. So, you know, what we do here in Chicago is take it game by game. I mean, almost after every game you hear first the coaching staff talk about, we're going to talk about our next game and that's it, not anything else. And then the players really take that to heart. They really try to concentrate on just one game at a time and trying to play the best that they can and not take it any further than that.
Ed, I just want to ask you in closing, how important do you think it was for Noah, for Rose, for the others that were there last year, but especially those two young guys, to get the taste of the postseason last year? I mean, you can tell me if I'm out to lunch here, but this is something that Jonesy and I always talk about with the Raptors, where you got to be concerned about the culture of losing. Yeah, lose, get a high draft pick, that's great, you're going to improve. But
Eddie, you were in Minnesota, too.
you also can't discount the importance of playoff experience, even if it's a four-game sweep, getting the taste of even just the bright lights, the media attention, the intensity of the postseason and what that means to guys when they can carry it over to the next year and the next year and the years beyond that because they got that understanding early on.
Well, you know, those guys, Rose and Noah, they talk about that often and how they were perceived last year in the playoffs. They were, you know, they were happy to get in and happy to have the experience. You know, it's going to be different because they'll be hunted this upcoming year, and, you know, everybody will be coming after the team based on the standings and what's at stake because, you know, Boston's got a great team, but they've made some changes. And, you know, they're sort of fighting through those changes. The same with Miami. I mean, they now have Bibby playing some pretty high-level basketball for them now. But it's still different. They haven't been the same, and they haven't played with that group in the playoffs yet. So we're excited about where we are right now, and those guys can't wait for the opportunity to get in the playoffs. But until then, they still want to try to keep the lead and play as well as we can going into it.
Ed, really appreciate the time tonight. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you in Chicago on Saturday.
All right, guys.
Take care, Eddie.
Take care.
All right, man. All right.
There is Ed Pinckney, assistant coach of the Chicago Bulls.
What a great dude. And I tell you this, I remember when he was a Raptor in his first year, and this is the kind of guy he is. He was scheduled to do an interview with me 7, 8 o'clock one night for a show that was going to run on Sunday. We're waiting there. It's like 7:05, 7:10. We figure, typical athlete, you know, the guy's going to be late. He'll show up when he wants. He walks in at 7:12, apologizing profusely with one of his sons, holding one and walking the other one. And he said, Jonesy, I'm sorry I'm late. My wife is out with my daughter, and I got the boys, and one of them was sick, and I didn't want to miss the interview. And so he dressed the kids up, and he dragged them through the snow to come and do this interview. And he was only like 10 minutes late, and you'd swear he was 2 hours late. That's the kind of person he is. And I remember when Villanova beat Georgetown, the shot of Eddie Pinckney being lifted up and the words coming from him saying, Villanova basketball, you don't know how hard we worked for this. And I think Philadelphia is that kind of town, and I think Eddie Pinckney typifies that with his hard work.
Well, speaking of late, we're late for the break. We got to fly now.
All right.
It's a good story, though. And when we come back, Jack Armstrong. So we can take a couple of minutes away from Jacko. He's up next after the 40 Sports Update on Hoops on Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 590. Welcome back to Hoops on Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 590. Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you here until 8 o'clock tonight. Thanks again to James Johnson of the Toronto Raptors for joining us, and also assistant coach of the Chicago Bulls, Ed Pinckney. And joining us on the line now from the Raptors television broadcast, and of course, longtime analyst here at the Fan 590, former NCAA coach Jack Armstrong. How are you tonight, Jack?
Jonesy, I'm doing great. How are you?
A calmer Thursday night, Jack, as we get towards the Final Four and the NBA back in tow on a Thursday. What I wanted to ask you, Jack, we were talking to Eddie Pinckney about this, and you can probably shed some light onto this too. Even a place like Niagara, that's a mid-major, and not, you know, it's not Kentucky or Villanova or a Big East school or a Pac-10 school, or I almost said Southwest Conference where they all cheat, but Southeast Conference school. Jack, the allegiance that players have, and we're with you all the time, and it seems like you're always meeting up with former players and former assistant coaches, and the bond that you form at a school, and it really comes out at this time of the year when people, you know, kind of show their support for their school.
Well, you know, I think it's the beauty of athletics, not only, you know, the NCAA tournament, but I think that there's a common bond. I think both of you guys would agree because you've both competed, and you understand that whole dynamic of when you get together with guys you played basketball with or baseball or hockey or whatever it is. There's just a great sense of pride, and there's shared experiences that, you know, sometimes we're great, sometimes we're tough, and sometimes we're very funny. And obviously when your actual team is doing well, the school that you went to does well, it puts it's icing on the cake, really. It's the cherry on the top. But I just think that it brings back happy memories. And I think as we get older, we get more sentimental. And I just think that that's the beauty of it. You know, different than maybe with pro sports. I think with college, I think it brings you back to a time where you know, there was still so much promise in your life to do a lot of different things, and you just kind of you reminisce and you feel great about a lot of the things that you experienced and the people you experienced it with.
Jack, I'm going to break one of my rules here and play the sort of wild, the what if, the hypothetical.
Uh oh, Jack, look out, look out!
You know I hate it, and I'm going to break my own rule and do it. play along with me here, Jack. What if? Whether you were coaching at the time or it even happened right now, what would a run like this, making it to the Final Four, like Butler's done 2 years in a row, like VCU's doing this year, what would that have done for the program at Niagara, let alone for you personally as a head coach?
Well, the program at Niagara would have allowed us to recruit at a very high level on a year-to-year basis in the Northeast and Southern Ontario, and in the Midwest as well, and get in on guys that maybe you wouldn't have a chance at. I think Gonzaga would be a perfect example of a program that has been consistently able to stay at a high level. They haven't been to the Final Four. They haven't done that, but they've been able to be a ranked team on almost a yearly basis and a team that gets in a postseason play on a yearly basis. So I think that would be one thing. I think it would have an amazing benefit to the school in terms of the number of applications for enrollment. You know, a very popular name in Toronto is a guy named Doug Flutie, who is a great player, obviously with the Argonauts as well as out west. And he, you know, the Flutie factor, when Doug Flutie in 1984 threw a pass to Gerald Phelan and beat Miami, and, you know, Doug Flutie was a hero. Well, Boston College as a university went off the charts in terms of academically and obviously the enrollment and the amount of money donated. So Georgetown, when Patrick Ewing was there, the same thing. Georgetown's a phenomenal school, but it moved to a totally different level in terms of the scope and the interest in the university. And Butler is experiencing that right now, and obviously from a professional perspective for a coach, if I were in that position, or you know, Shaka right now and Brad at those respective schools, you know, they become instant millionaires.
Jack, I just want to ask you then. I think you and I have had these private conversations. I don't know if this is something you want to talk about on the air or not, but I'm going to throw it out there. When you made the decision after Niagara to venture into broadcasting, did you at the time have options to coach at a different program or even since then? I mean, we're going back 13 years now, but did you have offers from other schools even in the last 13 years to maybe return to coaching at any program, whether it be D1 or D2?
Yeah, right when I left, I was offered the top assistant job at George Washington. And for Tom Penders, who I had worked for at Fordham, he had left the University of Texas. And, you know, I just decided I was burnt out and I needed a year away from coaching, so I didn't take it. And then a year after that, I was offered the head coaching job at the University of Buffalo. They were going to go on probation. And I didn't feel like it was the right situation for me at that point in my life where, you know, you're going to go through the first few years, probably 20 lost seasons. And in college, that gets you, in the words of Dick Vitale, the Ziggy. And I didn't want to deal with that, particularly, you know, after having the experience I had at Niagara where I didn't win enough. And, you know, coupled with that, the leash gets a lot shorter. And I just didn't think those were – so those are two situations that I had immediately right after I left coaching that on both fronts, and I talked a lot with my coaching friends, that I decided I didn't want to do. And a dear friend of mine, Pete Lonergan, a former head coach at Niagara.
I went to his camps, Jack. You know that.
Yeah.
Yep.
And he said to me, he says, Jack, do you want to spend, you know, the next 5 years of your life maybe being a top assistant at some school and then getting an opportunity to be the head coach at Columbia or Dartmouth? And then, you know, what's going to happen when you go to Columbia, Dartmouth? Well, 4 years later, you're probably going to struggle to win because you're taking over a bad team because those jobs open because they're bad. And by the time you get a chance to get your feet on the ground, you're almost out the door again. So, you know, do you want to do that to your family? So I just reached the point where I said, you know what, the gig in Toronto is really good. I love it. I still have the connection with the college game as well, doing the college games that I do in the U.S. for the various networks. And I'm very happy with doing what I'm doing. And I've said this to you guys many times. A guy said to me one time, are you happy? And I said, yeah. He goes, well, don't mess with happy. And I'm happy. And, you know, you never say never. And if an opportunity presented itself as a coach or as an executive and it was the right situation, I'd consider it. But every day further I'm away from it, I have less and less desire for it. You know, you never say never, but it would have to be the right situation.
Jack, you don't know how prophetic your words are about taking jobs and then, you know, getting caught in a losing cycle as we Eric and I happened to get into a bit of that conversation yesterday. But in terms of the coaching, when you look at what's happening at Butler with Stevens and when you look at Smart at VCU and what the possibilities could be for them as they you know, become the flavor of the month and hit the map. And then you look at the other side with a guy like Calipari and a guy like Calhoun where, well, you're supposed to be there, and it's almost a relief that they are where they are. I mean, there's quite a contrast in both of those sides. Right now we're saying we are assured of David versus Goliath on Monday night.
No, it's a beautiful thing. And you know, I know John Calipari and Jim Calhoun very well for many years, and those are, you know, bulldog competitors, and quite frankly, they don't like each other at all. You know, they're at programs where there's an expectation there that, you know, Sweet 16, Elite 8, yeah, that's pretty good, but we expect to be in the Final Four. You look at the women's program at Connecticut. How about the fact that Connecticut's men and women's team three times have gone both to the Final Four, which is remarkable. So there's a high standard there, and obviously Kentucky speaks for itself. So it's a pressure cooker. And Jonesy, you hit the nail on the head. You're relieved when you get there. Whereas it's, you know, complete joy and jubilation when you're at Butler and VCU. But I think if I could sit down with Brad Stevens and Shaka Smart and advise them and say, hey, what's the next step in your career? I would say, you know, happiness isn't necessarily money. Happiness is going to be, there's such a thing as good programs and there's such a thing as bad programs. And and as coaches, we all have significant egos and we think we are the difference. And in many ways we can be, but there still comes a point where there's institutional support, how good your president, how good your board of trustees, how good your athletic director, support staff, the commitment, the boosters, the intrusion, I could write a book on it. And you know, you really, it has to be, there's a reason why, and we say this all the time in pro sports, there's a reason why professional sports teams, whether it be basketball, baseball, hockey, football, win on a consistent basis, and there's a reason others don't. And it's the same thing in college. So you gotta, if I sat with those two guys, I would just say, hey, really do your research, understand the history of things, and, you know, make sure you put yourself in a position where the job works for you as well as you work for it.
Jack, really appreciate the time tonight. As always, we will see you over the course of the weekend and enjoy the games. And we'll be talking, obviously, down at the ACC shortly as well.
Thanks, guys. Have a great night.
All right, Jacko.
Jack Armstrong, Raptors television analyst and former NCAA coach. Thanks to everybody involved in the show tonight. James Johnson of the Toronto Raptors, Ed Pinckney, assistant coach of the Chicago Bulls, and, of course, the man you just heard, Jack Armstrong. Also, thanks to producer Joel McFadden and technical director Joe Sicilia. For Paul Jones, I'm Eric Smith. The Soccer Show comes up next. This has been Hoops on Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590.